All right, let's jump into another deep dive. Today, we're going to be looking at contemporary political issues, specifically from a conservative perspective.
Okay.
We've got two articles that you sent over, one from American Thinker called Reagan Revolution 2.0, Burying Communism for Good, and another from The Federalist. It's called Four Ways Trump Can Scrap Biden's Equity Discrimination and Promote Real Equality.
Got it.
Both of these pieces, they focus on ideas that have really become pretty central to conservative thought these days,
Yeah.
the perceived dangers of communism and arguments against these equity programs. And it's kind of interesting how these topics, which might seem separate at first, actually tap into some like deeper anxieties
Yeah, for sure.
about, power and fairness and just how we structure our society as a whole.
It's a good point. Yeah, and jumping right into that American Thinker piece, the author, really, they don't mince words at all.
Right.
I mean, their main point is that communism, in all its forms, is inherently flawed. It's
Yes.
dangerous. And they even go so far as to compare,
Oh, okay.
leftists who advocate for socialist policies to roaches
Whoa.
who keep, they keep trying to rebrand communism despite its history of failures.
Okay, roaches. That's a strong image for sure.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder if that kind of language actually helps them or ends up turning people away. But okay, beyond the rhetoric, like, is there any substance to this claim that communism has always failed?
Well, so they bring up two major historical examples.
Yeah.
USSR, obviously,
Right.
and the Khmer Rouge regime in Cambodia.
Right.
And both, undeniably brutal,
Yeah.
led to immense suffering, no question.
Of course, yeah.
The author's arguing that these regimes, kind of regardless of the specific context, really exemplify the inherent flaws in the communist ideology.
Right.
But it's worth, stopping and thinking, do these examples really tell the whole story?
Right.
I mean, the Soviet Union, for example, they achieved rapid industrialization. They played a key role in defeating Nazi Germany, right?
Yeah.
The author seems to be, I don't know, maybe overlooking some of the complexities of these historical events.
It seems like they're trying to use those tragedies to make a very broad statement about anything that could fall under the umbrella of communism. And there's that quote from the article. It says, "It's been 400 years of running the same experiment on something that has never really been tried before."
Right.
It feels a little contradictory. And how are they even defining communism here?
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're kind of painting this picture of communism as this monolithic ideology,
Right.
like this single entity that's been tried and failed over and over and over again.
Right.
But the reality is there's a huge spectrum of communist thought, right?
Right.
You go from Marxist-Leninist states like the USSR to anarchist collectives that actually prioritize direct democracy. And there are big differences in how these ideologies are put into practice. The author is kind of, I think, lumping all these variations together
Yeah.
under this one label, which could be very misleading.
Right. It's like saying all democracies are the same just because they have elections, even though
Exactly.
they're structured and function very differently.
Yeah, exactly.
So how do they connect these historical examples to the present day, though? Like, what are they saying about communism and the dangers in today's world and politics?
Well, their argument is that modern-day leftists,
Yeah.
are basically just rebranding communism with terms like democratic socialism or social justice. But ultimately, these are just new masks, they're saying,
Okay.
for the same old dangerous ideas. And that communism, no matter what you call it,
Right.
will always inevitably rely on, force and lies to maintain control.
Okay.
They go so far as to use the phrase societal slavery to describe
Oh.
life under a communist regime.
Societal slavery is a very loaded term.
It is,
Yeah, for sure.
for sure.
It's designed to really evoke a strong emotion and conjure up these images of oppression. But are they giving us any concrete evidence to back that up? Or is it more about just painting this bleak picture to scare people? I'm starting to think that their main goal here is to instill fear and distrust of anything that is even remotely associated with, left-leaning policies.
Yeah, I think you're picking up on something there,
Okay.
for sure.
Yeah. So it feels like they're appealing to emotion rather than actually engaging in a nuanced discussion of political ideologies.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment of that
Okay.
article.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So building on this idea of these perceived threats, that Federalist article we have, it focuses on something a bit different, Biden's equity agenda.
Yeah.
This one claims that these initiatives, which, are designed to address systemic inequalities are actually themselves discriminatory
right.
and unconstitutional. What's the main argument there? What are they saying?
Well, so the author is saying that equity, at least as it's being implemented by the Biden administration, mm-hmm. is actually unfairly favoring certain racial groups at the expense of others.
Okay.
They're saying it's essentially flipping the script on discrimination.
Right.
And they're arguing that instead of promoting equality of opportunity for everyone,
yeah.
these policies are actually resulting in preferential treatment based solely on race.
Okay.
Which, you know, they see as a violation of the Constitution's guarantee of equal protection under the law.
Okay, so they're making a very sharp distinction between equity and equality.
Yes.
Could you unpack that a bit more for us? What do they actually mean by these terms, and why do they see this idea of equity as so, so problematic?
Sure. So they see equality as meaning that everyone has the same opportunities, the same access to resources,
okay.
regardless of, you know, their background or anything else.
Okay.
Equity, on the other hand, they're saying that acknowledges that there are, like, historical and systemic factors
right.
that might be creating barriers for some groups and seeks to address those inequalities through specific targeted policies.
Gotcha.
The author's problem is that they think this whole approach actually leads to reverse discrimination.
Okay.
Where certain people are actually disadvantaged simply because of their race or their ethnicity.
That's where it gets really, really complicated. Like,
yeah.
how do you find that balance of yeah. addressing the injustices of the past without creating new forms of inequality? It's tricky.
It's a tough one.
And they point to specific examples like the American Rescue Plan Act mm-hmm. and the Inflation Reduction Act.
Right.
What do they see as, like, discriminatory about those programs?
Well, they're claiming that those programs, even though they're presented as promoting equity,
yeah.
actually include provisions that specifically prioritize certain racial groups over others.
Right.
For example, they point to, like, sections of the American Rescue Plan Act that actually allocated funds specifically for minority-owned businesses
mm.
or farmers. And they say that that kind of assistance, that kind of targeted assistance, is inherently unfair to anyone who's excluded based solely on their race.
So are they basically saying that any policy that even considers race is automatically discriminatory?
That seems to be what they're saying, yeah.
Yeah.
They argue that the Constitution is, you know, colorblind.
Right.
And that any government program that uses race as a factor in deciding how to, you know, allocate resources or benefits, that that's unconstitutional.
Gotcha.
They think this whole approach undermines the goal of a truly equal society.
Right.
They even claim that some equity programs have already been struck down in court.
Really?
They cite a statistic of 0 for 9 in descending racial preferences in court cases.
Wow.
Which, you know, if that's true, suggests that there is this legal trend against these types of policies.
That legal angle is really, really fascinating. Are they saying that equity, like the whole concept, is just incompatible with the law?
Yeah, they might be. And they also offer a solution, you know.
Okay, what do they suggest?
So they've laid out a 4-step plan, and this is aimed at the Trump administration, to dismantle this equity agenda.
Okay.
First, they want to rescind Biden's executive order on racial equity.
Okay.
Then they want to conduct this comprehensive legal review of all agency, DEI, and affirmative action programs.
Got it.
They want to settle lawsuits that are challenging these programs.
Okay.
And then finally, investigate any allegations of racial discrimination in any institution that receives federal funds. So, yeah, it's a pretty bold call to action. It's aimed at just rolling back these types of initiatives across the board.
It sounds like they're advocating for, like, a complete shift.
They are.
In how we as a country, as a society, approach social justice and inequality. But I'm still a little stuck on, like, the practical implications of what they're saying.
Yeah.
If any policy that even considers race is discriminatory, how do we address these disparities, these very real disparities that continue to exist in our society? It's a tough question.
Yeah, and that's the key question that's really left unanswered here.
Yeah.
They seem to be advocating for, like, going back to this purely colorblind approach.
Mm-hmm.
But then critics argue that this ignores the very real ways that race does continue to affect opportunities and outcomes.
Right.
For people.
Yeah.
It's a very complex debate. Mm. There are no easy answers here.
It definitely feels like we've only just started to scratch the surface here.
Yeah, yeah.
These articles give us one perspective
on
these issues, a very specific conservative perspective.
Right.
But they really raise a lot of questions about how we even navigate these concepts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Equality and equity and justice.
Yeah.
In a society that's still trying to grapple with its own history of discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot.
It's a lot to unpack.
It's a lot to unpack. It's like we're standing at a crossroads and we're trying to figure out which path is going to lead to a more just and equitable society. But, you know, as we've seen in these articles, even those terms, justice and equity,
right,
are debated so fiercely.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what I think is really interesting about both these pieces is just the sense of urgency, even alarm that they convey.
Yeah.
It's like they're sounding the alarm about this imminent threat.
Racist.
Whether it's this, you know, creeping influence of communism or the dangers of equity programs.
Yeah. That underlying anxiety really comes through.
In
the American Thinker article, it's almost like they're saying communism is lurking around every corner and it's going to enslave us all.
Yeah.
And then with that Federalist piece, it's almost like equity is this, like wolf in sheep's clothing. It's disguised as social justice, but it's actually going to lead to tyranny.
It's interesting, right? They both like tap into this fear of losing control, like this sense that the values and the systems that they believe in are under attack.
Right.
And they use very strong language to make that point.
Yeah, they do.
Think about, you know, that roaches analogy we talked about, or the way they equate communism with, you know, societal slavery. Those aren't just neutral descriptions.
Yeah.
Those are very loaded terms that are designed to, you know, to evoke a visceral reaction.
It's almost like they're trying to bypass any rational debate and go straight for that gut punch, which makes me wonder, are these arguments actually resonating with a broader audience?
It's hard to say.
Or are they mostly preaching to the choir?
That's a good question. It's hard to say for sure.
Right.
But what we can say is that, you know, these articles represent a particular strain of conservative thought that's gained a lot of traction in recent years.
Yeah. It has.
There's a real concern among some conservatives that the country is moving in a direction that they just fundamentally disagree with.
Right, right. And that brings us back to that question we were talking about earlier. What are those underlying anxieties that are fueling these arguments? Is it about economics? A fear of losing social status? Is it something else? What do you think?
It's probably a whole mix of things. I mean, there's definitely an economic element. You know, concerns about inequality, a sense that the system's rigged against the working class.
Yeah.
But then there's a cultural dimension, too.
Yeah. Right?
This sense that traditional values and institutions are being eroded or even, like, outright attacked.
Yeah.
And these fears often get, like, intertwined.
Of course, yeah.
And it creates this kind of unease and this longing for, you know, a return to a time when things felt simpler, more stable, more certain.
Right. It's like they're searching for a way to make sense of a world that feels like it's increasingly complex and unpredictable.
Absolutely.
But as we kind of wrap up this first part of our deep dive here, I'm left with more questions than answers.
I hear you.
How do we even begin to have these difficult conversations about justice and equality in a way that doesn't just devolve into fear-mongering and division?
Right.
And how do we even find common ground when our definitions of fairness are so fundamentally different?
Those are the million-dollar questions.
You really are.
And, you know, I don't think there's a simple answer, but one thing that I think could be really helpful is to try to move beyond those broad, like, ideological labels and actually engage with the real life experiences of people who are affected by these policies.
Mm.
Instead of talking about, you know, communism or equity as these like abstract concepts, why don't we listen to the stories of the people who are, you know, struggling to make ends meet, who are facing discrimination, who are just trying to build a better future for themselves and their families.
I love that. I think humanizing these issues is so important.
It is.
It's such a good point. It's a reminder that behind all the political rhetoric are real people. With real lives, with real struggles. And maybe, you know, just maybe, by listening to each other's stories with empathy and with open minds, we can start to bridge those divides that seem to be separating us.
I think that's beautifully said.
Yeah. Well, on that note, we'll leave you with this one final thought to kind of ponder.
Mm-hmm.
How can you, yourself, engage in these conversations in your own life? How can you do it in a way that's respectful, that's thoughtful, and ultimately productive? It's tough, but it's important work.
It is. Couldn't agree more.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Of course.
We'll see you next time.
See ya.
So it really feels like they're appealing more to emotion than having a nuanced discussion of these political ideologies.
Right.
But kind of building on this idea of these perceived threats, the Federalist article focuses on something different.
Right.
Biden's equity agenda.
Right.
And it claims that these initiatives, you know, which are designed to address these systemic inequalities, are actually discriminatory and unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. What's the core argument here?
So the author contends that equity, as it's implemented by the Biden administration, is actually unfairly favoring certain racial groups at the expense of others.
Okay.
Essentially flipping the script on discrimination.
Right, right.
They argue that instead of, you know, trying to promote equality of opportunity for everyone, these policies are actually resulting in preferential treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And this preferential treatment is based solely on race.
Got it.
Which they see as a violation of the Constitution's guarantee of equal protection under the law.
Okay, so they're drawing a very sharp distinction here.
Yes, very sharp.
Between equity and equality.
Exactly.
Can you unpack that for us a little bit? Like, what do they even mean by these terms in this context? And why is equity so problematic in their view?
Sure. So they see equality as meaning like everyone having the same opportunities, the same access to resources.
Right.
It doesn't matter what their background is.
Gotcha.
Equity, on the other hand. Yeah. They're saying that acknowledges that historical and systemic factors might create barriers for certain groups.
Okay.
And it seeks to address those inequalities through these very specific targeted policies.
Right.
But the author's issue is that they believe this leads to reverse discrimination.
Okay.
Where individuals are actually disadvantaged because of their race or ethnicity.
That's where it gets like really tricky.
It does.
How do you balance addressing these past injustices without creating new forms of inequality?
Right, right.
It's a really, really tough question.
It's a tough one, yeah.
And they point to these specific examples like the American Rescue Plan Act and the Inflation Reduction Act.
Right.
What do they see as discriminatory in those?
They claim that those programs, even though they're being presented as, you know, promoting equity.
Right.
They actually include provisions that prioritize certain racial groups over others.
Okay.
For example, they point to sections of the American Rescue Plan Act that allocated funds specifically for minority-owned businesses or farmers.
Okay.
And they argue that that kind of targeted assistance is inherently unfair to those who are excluded.
Right.
Based solely on their race.
So are they saying that any policy that takes race into account at all is automatically discriminatory?
It seems like that's their stance, yeah.
Wow.
They argue that the Constitution is colorblind.
Mm-hmm.
Any government program that uses race as a factor in deciding how to allocate resources or benefits is unconstitutional.
Okay.
They believe that that approach ultimately undermines the goal of a truly equal society.
Right, right.
They even claim that several equity programs have already been struck down in court.
Oh, wow.
They cite this statistic of 0-9 in defending racial preferences in court cases.
Oh, wow.
So that, you know, that suggests the legal trend against such policies.
That's interesting, that legal angle. Are they saying that this whole idea of equity, like the concept itself, is incompatible with the law?
That's what it sounds like, yeah.
Wow.
And they offer a solution, too.
Okay, what do they propose?
Okay, so they've laid out this four-step plan for the Trump administration to essentially dismantle the equity agenda.
Okay.
First, they call for rescinding Biden's executive order on racial equity.
Okay.
Second, they want to conduct a comprehensive legal review of all agency, DEI, and affirmative action programs.
Right.
Third, they want to settle lawsuits challenging these programs.
Gotcha.
And finally, investigate any allegations of racial discrimination in institutions receiving federal funds.
Wow. That's a lot.
It is.
It seems like they're advocating for a complete shift.
100%.
In how we approach these issues of social justice and inequality.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still struggling with, like, the practical implications of that.
Yeah.
If any consideration of race in policy is discriminatory, how do we address the disparities that exist?
Right. That's the big question they don't really answer.
Right.
They seem to be advocating for a return to a purely colorblind approach.
Right.
But then, you know, critics would argue that ignores the very real ways that race continues to shape opportunities and outcomes.
Absolutely.
It's a complex debate, and there just aren't easy answers.
It feels like we've only just scratched the surface.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, these articles offer one specific perspective,
it's like a
conservative perspective.
Right.
But they raise so many questions about how we navigate these concepts of equality, equity, and justice in a society that's still grappling with its own history of discrimination. It really feels like we're at this crossroads trying to figure out which path leads to a more just and equitable society.
Exactly.
But even those terms, justice and equity, they're fiercely debated.
Oh, absolutely.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And what I think is so striking about both of these pieces is just that sense of urgency, even alarm.
Yeah, there's a real that they can
sense of like warning almost. Yeah. It's like they're sounding the alarm about some imminent threat.
Exactly.
Whether it's, you know, communism creeping in or the dangers of these equity programs.
It's basically saying the sky is falling.
And in that American Thinker article, it's almost like they're saying communism is lurking around every corner and it's going to enslave us all.
Exactly.
And then in the Federalist piece, equity is this, like wolf in sheep's clothing, disguised as social justice, but really going to lead to tyranny.
It's interesting, isn't it, how they both tap into this fear of a loss of control.
Yeah.
You know, this sense that the values and systems that they believe in are under attack.
Right.
And they use really strong language.
They do?
To get that point across.
Yeah.
Think back to like the roaches analogy.
Oh, yeah.
Or how they equate communism with societal slavery. I mean, these aren't just neutral descriptions.
Yeah.
Those are very loaded terms.
They are.
They're meant to evoke a visceral reaction.
It's almost like they're trying to skip the rational debate part and go right for that gut punch.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder.
Sure.
Are these arguments really resonating?
Yeah. Are they preaching to the choir?
Yeah.
Or is this something bigger?
Preaching to the choir. It's hard to say for sure.
Right.
But I think we can say for certain that these articles represent like a very specific strain of conservative thought.
Right.
That's been gaining traction.
It has been,
for the past few years.
Yeah, for sure. And that brings us back to that question that we were talking about before.
Yeah.
What are the underlying anxieties here? What's fueling these arguments?
What is it? Is it about economics? Is it about a fear of like losing social status? Or is it something else entirely?
Right.
It's probably a little bit of everything.
Right. Probably.
I mean, there's definitely an economic piece of it.
Yeah.
Concerns about rising inequality.
Mm-hmm.
The sense that the system is rigged against the working class. But there's also that cultural dimension.
Right.
That sense that traditional values and, you know, institutions are being eroded or even attacked.
Yeah.
And these fears, they often get intertwined.
Of course.
It creates this feeling of unease.
Right.
This longing to go back to a time when things felt more simple.
Yeah. Simpler.
More stable.
Certain. It's like they're searching for answers in a world that's becoming increasingly complex and unpredictable.
And as we wrap up this deep dive, I'm left with, honestly, more questions than answers.
Me too.
How do we even begin to have these difficult conversations?
Yeah, how?
About justice and equality in a way that doesn't just turn into fear-mongering division. Yeah.
And how do we find common ground when our definitions of fairness are so different?
Those are the million-dollar questions.
Yeah, they really are.
And I don't think there's, like, one easy answer.
Yeah.
But one thing I think could really help is if we could try to move beyond these broad ideological labels and really engage with the real life experiences of people who are affected by these policies.
That's a good point.
Instead of just talking about communism or equity as these abstract concepts, why don't we listen to the stories of the people who are struggling?
Yeah. The real people.
The people who are facing discrimination.
The people behind the policies.
Exactly. The people who are just trying to build better lives for themselves and their families.
I love that. I think humanizing these issues is so important.
It really is.
Yeah. It's a good reminder that behind all of the political rhetoric are real people.
Real
people. With real lives and real struggles.
Absolutely.
And maybe, just maybe, if we listen to each other's stories with empathy and with open minds,
right,
we can start to bridge these divides that seem to be separating us.
Beautifully said. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Well, on that note, we'll leave you with this final thought. How can you engage in these conversations in your own life? How can you do it in a way that is respectful and thoughtful and productive? It's tough, but it's important work.
It is.
It is.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
It was a pleasure.
We'll see you next time.
See you then.